If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Andrew Buss joins us now. We've been talking about this book and the movie. The book is called McLovin, and the movie is Superbad, and he's written a book about that. I Am McLovin, How Superbad Became the Biggest Comedy Hit of Its Generation. Andrew, you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, we're doing good. I know a little bit about you. You've written about pop culture and particularly funny things in pop culture. You've written oral histories on films and TV shows, Zoolander, Superbad, Airheads, The Jerk, High Fidelity. The list goes on. You're kind of dialed into this space, it sounds like. But just tell me about how you arrived at Superbad.
Yes, absolutely. So I have been working... I had been working for Vanity Fair, writing different oral histories over the years, as a contributor. And then, at one point, Superbad kind of got in my head because it's a movie that's always been very near and dear to my heart because, when I saw it, it was opening day and I was with my dad and my grandfather. And it was one of the only times in my life that there was ever like a three generation of, you know, of the male bonding kind of experience, and one of it was seeing Superbad. And so that always stuck out, but also the movie is so funny, and it was one of the best screenings of a comedy I'd ever been to, where everything was just working, and there was like an electricity in the room. So I knew when the anniversary came around for the 15th anniversary, I wanted to write about it, and everything came together very quickly over at Vanity Fair, and I got to interview everybody, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Bill Hader, Seth Rogen, Judd Apatow, Emma Stone. So I was really impressed with how quickly it came together, and then that the success of the oral history kind of led to me wanting to write the book.
Yeah, right. Well, the movie was made in 2007, right?
Yes.
So 15 years later is 22. Here we are at 20.
That's when I wrote the oral history, the article that led to the book.
I got it. Yeah.
It took a couple of years, yes.
What a killer's row. What a murderer's row. Emma Stone, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Bill Hader, Seth Rogen. I mean, wow.
It really is remarkable that this movie, you know, kind of launched all these careers. And I mean, I think it goes back to Judd Apatow's kind of eye for talent. It's something he's really good at. If you look at the people that he's kind of broken over the years, the list is pretty remarkable. So but it really is interesting when you watch the movie and see, oh, that person broke. And then even there's cameos where it's like, oh, that person went on to do this, that person went on to do that. So it really is interesting when you look at all of the people that, you know, had their careers launched by this movie. Multiple Oscar nominations and two Oscars amongst the cast. Both Emma Stone, but still.
Did you get the feeling, in your reporting on this, did they realize that this was going to be a hit? The movie was made for $20 million. I believe it made about a little under $200 million. They weren't all household names or superstars yet. Did they know they had either a superstar cast, or did they know that they had a hit when they made the movie?
They figured it out pretty quickly, because what had happened was, as the movie was coming out, it was the classic scenario of overnight kind of success, where the next day they can't walk down the street without people shouting at them. And there's some stories in the book. Christopher Mintz-Plasse especially got the worst of it, being McLovin, who was very much kind of became the comic relief / kind of face of the movie with the ID. So he would tell me stories that, like, the following weekend he was in the Chipotle and, you know, he's 18 and girls are coming up to him and, like, tearing at his clothes, like the kind of rock star status that he got. And then all the guys kind of got that right when the movie came out. So they realized pretty quickly they had a bit of a hit on their hands. Their faces were on every billboard So they figured it out, and then the movie just kind of never went away over the years.
How lucky for, say, Jonah Hill or Christopher Mintz-Plasse or Michael Cera, for that matter, that they would get that rock star treatment, because they are of a type that is described in the movie. You know, nobody, at least at that time, was coming up to Jonah Hill and going, "Ooh, you're so handsome, and I just want to touch you. You're a Hollywood star." And certainly Christopher Mintz-Plasse is looks like a geek. How did he come to be cast in the film?
Well, that's probably the most interesting casting story. They had McLovin, the Fogel character, is such a specific type. He is clearly a nerd, but his type is he thinks he's the coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
So there's not a pathetic kind of feel to him. I think Greg Mottola said he's described him as thinking he's Dean Martin, not Jerry Lewis. So
that's good.
It's a very
that's good.
Type, yeah.
And I remember when the movie... go ahead, keep telling us the story. How did they find him, though?
So what had happened was they started just putting notices in high schools all around Los Angeles, and just, you know, flyers like you would for a school play, but it was a major motion picture. And then they finally did an open call, and he came in with a friend of his. He sent him a headshot that was taken on a flip phone. He was just perfect, what they were looking for. They wanted someone that could hold their own against the guys. And then when he did a screen test with Jonah Hill, Jonah Hill started ad-libbing, and then Christopher Mintz-Plasse started ad-libbing, and then Jonah Hill went to them afterwards. It kind of pissed off Jonah that Jonah said he was stepping on his lines, and so Jonah went to them and said, "You cannot and will not hire him." And then they said, "The fact that he annoys you so much is why we are going to hire him. It is perfect." And so, you know, they hired him even though Jonah was steadfast against it at the time. But he came around pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, they all do have a kind of chemistry on the screen. I mean, the casting is perfect. It just so works. And I do remember when the movie came out and you thought, oh, they're going to pick on this kid. He's going to be the butt of the jokes. But he holds his own. McLovin, I'll play the scene back. I played it earlier with heavy editing, mind you. But the scene where he does get the ID as McLovin, you realize that however goofy these guys are or ridiculous this scheme is, that he doesn't feel pathetic at all. You're right. He thinks he's Dean Martin, not Jerry Lewis. That's so apt.
Yes.
And Jonah Hill in the movie, as a teenager, is 24 years old in real life when that's made, right?
Yeah, and that was part of why they were against casting him. He had been lobbying for himself to play the part, and they said, you're too old, because they knew him so well. They had worked with him, and they loved him. It wasn't because they didn't like him. They kept casting him, and they were working on Knocked Up, and he was playing a guy, you know, in his 20s and Knocked Up, and they're like, "You can't do it." Finally, he begged them, and they couldn't find anyone that was as funny as Michael Cera, they said. So they said, "You know what? Why don't you put yourself on tape?" And as soon as they saw him, his tape, they're like, "We are stupid for ever thinking it wasn't."
And why did we ever doubt you?
Right. Exactly.
talk about Emma Stone's arrival on the scene.
So she, at the time, she was also younger. She was 17, I think, about to turn 18. And she had done a TV show that lasted, I think, half a season on Fox. So she hadn't done very much. She had done an episode of a Louis C.K. sitcom called Lucky Louie on HBO. But she wasn't doing very much. And she was just starting out, and she had never done a film. And then Allison Jones had remembered her from multiple failed auditions, and Emma told me that she gets a call one day and said, "You know what, why don't you come in and read for this thing?" And what had happened was she wound up getting the part, but before that, Greg Mottola told me there was one studio executive. Everyone knew that she was going to be a star. Everybody knew she was perfect. There was one executive that said, "I don't know if it's right," because they were looking for a more traditional kind of, you know, blonde love interest that you would see in a teen comedy. You know, like the popular girl, that kind of trope. And Greg Mottola, the director, said, why don't you have lunch with her? And then the executive did, and then he came back and he said, you know what, you're totally right. So he knew that she is so charming that it was clear to everybody that she was going to be a star. And when you watch the movie, you can tell that there's a real presence. I mean, she is only in the movie for like 8 minutes or so, but she does such a great job and is so believable in, you know, her chemistry with the Seth character is obnoxious and kind of as over the top as he might be at times.
I wanted to ask you about Michael Cera, too. And if I do play back one scene, I do have to play the scene where McLovin is trying to convince Jonah Hill and Michael Cera's characters that his idea is going to work.
No, man, I got it. It's flawless. Check it.
Hawaii. Uh-huh. All right, that's good. It's hard to trace, I guess. Wait, you changed your name to McLovin? McLovin? What kind of a stupid name is that, Fogle? What, are you trying to be an Irish R&B singer?
Oh, they let you pick any name you want when you get down there.
And you landed on McLovin?
Yeah, I was between that and Muhammad.
Why would it be between that or Muhammad? Why don't you just pick a common name like a normal person?
Muhammad is the most commonly used name on Earth. Read a book for once.
Fogle, have you ever actually met anyone named Muhammad?
Have you actually ever met anyone named McLovin?
No, that's why you picked a dumb name.
Give me that.
All right. You look like a future pedophile in this picture, number one. Number two, it doesn't even have a first name. It just says McLovin.
What? One name? One name? Who are you, Seal?
Fogle, this ID says you're 25 years old. Why wouldn't you just put 21, man?
Seth, listen up. Every day, hundreds of kids go into the liquor store with their fake IDs, and every single one says they're 21. How many 21-year-olds do you think there are in this town? It's called strategy, all right?
Let's stay calm, okay? Let's not lose our heads. No. It's a fine ID. It's gonna work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible. I mean, it's up to you, Fogle. This guy's either gonna think, here's another kid with a fake ID, or here's McLovin, the 25-year-old Hawaiian organ donor. Okay, so what's it gonna be?
I am McLovin.
No, you're not. No one's McLovin. McLovin's never existed because that's a made-up, dumb fairy tale name, you...
Jeez, man, it'll work. Give it a chance.
How about that? I don't get tired of hearing that, do you, Andrew?
I said that was some good editing.
Thank you. Trust me, it is. Andrew Buss is the journalist and author of I Am McLovin, How Superbad Became the Biggest Comedy Hit of Its Generation. And that scene, of course, is the guys outside the liquor store trying to decide if McLovin is going to be able to pass for that ID. And by the way, it works. It works. She is going to give him the liquor, knowing full well that this is a stupid ID, and then all kinds of mayhem ensues right when he's about to get the beer or the vodka or whatever it was he was going to buy. And you named the book after his character. It's not Superbad. It's not Jonah Hill. It's McLovin. Why did you pick his character to be the title of your book?
Well, that's one of those things where I mean, with the film, like, obviously the movie itself, I've always said, is separation anxiety between the Seth and Evan characters. But, you know, in all honesty, I Am McLovin has become its own thing as part of the pop culture lexicon. And it is one of the most recognizable things from the film. That was part of the strategy. But also the McLovin character, I think, represents who we all want to be in high school, which we have these larger-than-life ideas. Now, obviously, where they're not as far-stretched as McLovin is, but I feel like McLovin is who would be your ultimate in high school? What do you want to do? And Fogle wants to be, it's like his alter ego, in a way. So I think there's something we all can identify is, if you had one night to be whoever you want to be, who would you be? And he chose McLovin. I look at it not as a dumb ID name, but I look at it as just like his fantasy. Like, who would he want to be? So, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Well, it's an iconic character. It is the sharpest character in a way, because you don't don't predict his personality when you look at that body type. And I wonder if those guys had a sense, they must have, that their very appearance is part of the joke and how they felt about that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely think they knew. Jonah, for instance, you know, I imagine Jonah knew that he wasn't, you know, going to be, like, you know, the conventional leading man in a lot of things. Although, Superbad kind of opened that door, and after Superbad, he had an offer to do things like the Transformers movie. He had an offer to be in The Hangover. He said that he got offered the Zach Galifianakis part in The Hangover, but he didn't want to do that. Instead, he did a movie called Cyrus, which was this little indie film. And that's why I think it's so interesting about Jonah, is he took an interesting career path. But as far as their look, yes, they all had I think they had to have known that that was part of it. I mean, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, this was his only credit up to that point. He had never done a film before Superbad. He had never acted. He had never auditioned for anything. He had acted in plays in high school. So I think he knew that the look was a big part of it. And Michael Cera, same thing. I mean, it was the year of Michael Cera, between that and Juno, which would come out a couple months later. So,
yeah. And
in
both
movies,
I think
they all knew that it was the look.
You recognize Michael Cera as Michael Cera in both of those movies. I love his work. I love his character in that movie. His deadpan delivery of some of those lines. You know, who do you think you are, Seal?
It's so good.
It's the comedic timing is really good between the three of them. So you put all of this.
He also came from, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, Michael Cera came from Arrested Development. He came from 3 years of working with these comedy heavyweights. So I think that probably, you know, maybe a little Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, David Cross kind of seeped in over the course of those 3 years on Arrested Development.
What are you working on now? What's the next project, movie, TV show? Are you still doing the Andy Kaufman stuff?
Yeah, I'm still working with the estate on different things. I've been a historian since 2015, so 10 years now. I've done a lot of different things. And the Andy Kaufman stuff's really interesting because I was working when I was in film school on an Andy Kaufman thing. I had an idea to write a film that didn't go anywhere. Got introduced to his sister, and then the following year, she introduced me to the late, great Bill Zamy, who became my mentor. You know, just this, for anyone that doesn't know, he was this very accomplished journalist, author. He had written for Rolling Stone, Esquire, and just had the Carson the Magnificent book come out.
Right, right. And no, we know him in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely. I know he had done the show before. So he took me under his wing, and I would say he mentored me to go into journalism and really steered me in that direction. So I owe him so much, and it all started because of the Andy Kaufman family. But, yeah, as far as the next thing, I'm working with them possibly on a project, and, I've got a bunch of different irons in the fire that I'm trying to figure out what direction to go in next.
He's written histories on such films as Zoolander, Superbad, High Fidelity, Freaks and Geeks. That's Andrew Bust, the journalist and author of Now I Am McLovin, How Superbad Became the Biggest Comedy Hit of Its Generation. Nice to talk to you, Andrew. It's a lot of fun, both the book and the movie. I'm glad you put those two things together.
Thank you so much. It was so great to get to talk with you this morning.